politics, sports, entertainment? Yeah, we've got that. It's WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
Thank you so much for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. We very much appreciate your presence. Traffic-wise, everything's fine around here. Matt Cotrillo assures us of that from the newsroom. Rob Center, our fabulous producer, assures us that everything's A-OK, and we're ready to go with our interview. Movie Mike McGranahan is in, professional movie critic, author, and women in cinema advocate. His website, aisleseat.com. Please do not go to the movies or watch one at home before you've checked out aisleseat.com. His appearance is sponsored by the Campus Theater. Check them out at campustheater.org. Thank you so much for coming in.
Good morning.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
In Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Leonardo DiCaprio is a washed-up TV actor trying to revitalize his career. Brad Pitt is his longtime stunt double who winds up encountering Charles Manson's followers. And Margot Robbie is actress Sharon Tate who lives next door. Their individual stories collide in interesting and unexpected ways leading up to one fateful night. This is Tarantino's most self-indulgent film. In this case, though, self-indulgence is not a bad thing. As the first four words of the title imply, it's a fairy tale, one packed with his particular obsessions, genre movies, old pop songs, cinemas, violence, and yes, women's feet. There are a whole lot of feet in this picture. While it intentionally lacks the cutting-edge style of Pulp Fiction, the movie hits you on a more intimate level. A great deal of effort is put into making the period setting feel real, from the music selections to the vintage radio ads that often populate the soundtrack to the multiple shots of L.A. locations. Creating that vibe allows the themes to sink in a little more. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is about how the entertainment business might have been different had the traumas of the late 60s not robbed it of a sense of innocence. DiCaprio, Pitt, and Robbie are all fantastic, and the movie's finale is unexpectedly satisfying. Tarantino has produced another winner. On a scale of 1 to 4, I give it 3.5 Roman Polanski's.
Why Roman Polanski's?
He was married to Sharon Tate at the time and was kind of central there to that whole story with Charles Manson. And
okay. Yes, I'm sure. I guess I know that. I'm not on top of the mind as it is for you, but everything's top of the mind for you. So, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I saw the trailer, and of course, I've been to other Quentin Tarantino films. How does one properly enjoy these movies? What's the mindset as you go in?
Well, this movie is a little different. You know, with Pulp Fiction, I think he kind of set a standard in everybody's mind that his films were going to be real flashy and have this wow factor in terms of the way they told the story and ironic use of music. And he's doing something a little bit different here. He's creating a vibe. This movie is 2 hours and 41 minutes. And it's about a vibe, and you have to be willing to get into that vibe. For example, there are many shots in the film of characters just driving around Los Angeles listening to the radio, and you hear vintage radio ads in their entirety. Or there's a scene where Sharon Tate goes to see one of the movies that she's in, and Tarantino shows her walking in the theater, sitting down, and watching the trailer for another movie, an old trailer from the 1960s. So he does a lot of things like that to just create this vibe and make you feel like you've been transported back to the late 60s, and that's how you have to watch this particular movie. If you go in expecting that razzle-dazzle of Pulp Fiction or Inglourious Basterds, you might be a little disappointed because he's trying to do something different here.
And this drew you in. Do these generally become box office successes when he's, you know, sort of exercising some of his self-indulgence, to use your phrase?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this one does. It actually had his biggest opening weekend ever, but his cinema score for this film was the lowest of his career. Cinema Score is the service that polls viewers as they come out of the theater on opening night. So you're basically getting the people who are most excited to see the film to see what they think of it. So it'd be kind of fascinating to watch what happens here after this big opening weekend. But I think that it is a film that probably is even better the second time or the third time. And what happens at the end is definitely going to be something that will leave people talking and discussing and debating its meaning.
Oh, well, that's a lot to commit to, though, to say that I'm going to watch a 2.5 hour plus movie once and find it satisfactory and watch it 2.5 hours again to find it ideal.
Mm-hmm.
You think some folks will do that and that will help this film?
I think so. Tarantino's movies always benefit from multiple viewings because they have so much going on in them. And his fans, and I'm one of them, are very dedicated to his films. You can go back and you can rewatch them and you can enjoy them just as much the second time, third third time, fourth time.
Oh, yeah, boy. Put on one scene of Pulp Fiction and you're going to have to stay to the end.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, that is definitely true. 3.5.
Roman Polanski's. Yeah,
okay. We appreciate that. New movies. What will you see today and what else is in the theaters today?
Only one new movie opening this weekend, which is Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw. As that title suggests, it's a spin-off of the Fast and the Furious franchise.
Now, that's a film I can get behind.
That one you're excited for? Yeah. That opens today with Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham. And, of course, they're kind of enemies, and they fight in this movie and then eventually team up to save the world, as these kinds of things happen in the Fast and Furious pictures.
Right. You're never huge fans, but box office-wise, they hold their own, and they have a following.
They're huge, and this one's probably going to open to at least $60 million this weekend. I am in the vast minority on the Fast and Furious movies. I enjoyed the original. I have not liked any of the other sequels. I'm hopeful that this one maybe will be a little more fun. I like these two actors, watching them kind of bicker around with each other for 2 hours. Could be entertaining, so I'm going in with an open mind.
My only lament is it's been 2 years or so or more since the last Fast and Furious. So
a couple years, we
had to wait for this one. All right, so you will see that today or something else? Okay, so we'll find out how we're not excited about you loving this. We'll just leave that at that. Entertainment news. Mm-hmm. Katy Perry, I guess the jury's decided what this rap song is worth?
Yeah, big news for Katy Perry this weekend. Unfortunately, not good for her. She and her record label and her producer, a guy named Dr. Luke, were sued by a Christian rap artist named Flame, who claimed that her song, Dark Horse, which was one of her biggest hits, kind of unintentionally, I guess, borrowed the underlying beat from one of his songs. He took them to court, and the jury found in his favor, and so Katy, her record company, and her producer now have to pay this guy almost $3 million for essentially having a riff in Dark Horse that sounded like a riff from one of his songs.
Right. Well, it is almost identical, but it's just one tiny segment of the whole thing.
It's one tiny segment. I've heard both songs. And the beat he's talking about, it's really the first thing that you hear when you listen to Dark Horse, for those who want to know. It's not a very complicated musical sequence. It doesn't seem unlikely to me that two people could have coincidentally come up with that. It's not like it was some complicated or really ingenious thing. It's just a very simple kind of beat there. So to me, I'm not quite sure how the jury found in his favor, but they did, and so Katy and her crew have to fork up quite a bit of money to this guy.
But on the other hand, songs like this can make $10, $20, $30 million.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not a lot, really. It'd be a big change for Flame.
Right.
But not so much for her, correct?
Right. They said that she personally will only owe about $500,000, and the rest will come from her record company. So it's one of those things. This kind of stuff happens all the time, and there are lots and lots of songs. I mean, I'm sure you've had the experience of listening to the radio and hearing a brand new song and thinking, hey, wait a minute, that kind of sounds like this other song. And most of the time, it's just coincidental. I don't necessarily think anybody is ripping anybody off, but there's only so many musical notes, and you arrange them, and sometimes they sound like other things. So this is not unusual, but in this case, Katy is being penalized for it.
Okay, so, and they're appealing. We should add this. They add that this is just a bad coincidence, and they didn't steal it, and that it is, it's not what the jury said, so they're appealing that. The Lion King passed a milestone this week.
Yes, The Lion King became Disney's fourth film of 2019 to cross the $1 billion mark worldwide. It follows Avengers Endgame, Captain Marvel, and Aladdin. So Disney has $4 billion grossers this year, and they still have Star Wars Episode 9 and Frozen 2 coming out later this year, so it's very likely that they will end up with at least $6 billion films in 2019.
When, going down the list into films that aren't quite to a $1 billion yet, when does a dramatic film appear on that list?
I don't know that one does. I mean, the films that make $1 billion, they're always the big action, superhero franchise kind of movies, the things with the big audiences. You wouldn't get like an intimate drama making that kind of money, or even a blockbuster comedy. I don't think there's ever been a comedy that's made $1 billion worldwide.
I mean, what does it have to do to get $1 billion? It has to appeal to everybody multiple times, all ages, many times.
And to play around the world, too, I think that's the other part of it. These films have to translate well into other cultures and be easily translatable into other languages so that when people go and see them with subtitles, they understand what's being talked about. So it can't necessarily be too American, if you know what I mean. So that's really the key, to create something that will play not just as a blockbuster in America, but a blockbuster in China and Australia and Japan and France and, you know, everywhere around the world.
Okay, so who's next on the list? Who's going to cross that list before too long? Probably one of these summer films that are coming out.
There's a chance that Spider-Man Far From Home could still be $1 billion, although I don't think that's owned by Disney necessarily. I think that's still under Columbia. But, yeah, you know, it's that kind of film that makes $1 billion worldwide, the big franchises.
Right. It Chapter 2, we know one thing about it today?
We know its length. It Chapter 2 opens in a month, and it was revealed this week that the running time will be a whopping 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Wow.
Now, in fairness, the movie is based on a book that is 1,000 pages, and It Chapter 1 was 2 hours and 15 minutes. So this isn't necessarily a long length, but the director, Andy Muschietti, says his original cut was 4 hours. He felt that was too long and knew people wouldn't tolerate it, so he cut it down to 2 hours and 45 minutes. He says that nobody who has seen the film yet has complained about the length. So as long as it moves quickly and is like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and keeps you invested for that length, fine. For me, that's a long time to have to look at a scary clown, but...
But so be it.
Yeah.
At ILC, follow them on Twitter. I do. CampusTheater.org, the sponsor. Movie Mike, the star of our Movie Mike McGranahan segment. Thank you so much for coming in, sir.
See you next time.